If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Late Night Podcast. Normally, you'd hear me doing a closer look right now, but today we have a special edition of the Late Night Podcast that was recorded live in Austin, Texas at South by Southwest. It stars Amber Ruffin and Jenny Hagel, two of our writers here on the show, and it's moderated by MSNBC's Joy Reid. And the topic is diversity in late night and news. Enjoy.
Welcome, everyone, to a special South by Southwest edition of the Late Night with Seth Meyers podcast. I'm Joy Reid, coming to you from MSNBC here in the TuneIn little live podcast studio. It's very posh, and we're really happy that you guys are here enjoying free drinks. I don't know if they're free, but drinks. I just said they were free, so go up and ask for a drink. And I am here with two amazing writer comedians from Late Night with Seth Meyers. I'm going to introduce them to you one at a time. I'm going to start with Amber Ruffin all the way on the end. Amber Ruffin writes on Late Night with Seth Meyers and Comedy Central's Detroiters. She's a regular narrator for Drunk History. She's got her drink in front of her. And she's an alum of the Second City main stage and Boom Chicago. And the girl loves writing musicals. Yes, give her a round of applause. And immediately to my left is Jenny Hagel. Jenny Hagel is a Puerto Rican TV writer and comedy performer in New York City. She currently writes for Late Night with Seth Meyers, and other writing credits include Impractical Jokers, Big Gay Sketch Show, and head writer of White Guy Talk Show. We have to get her to talk a little bit about that. And Jenny is an alumna of Second City in Chicago, and she holds an MFA in writing for screen and stage from Northwestern University. Give her a round of applause. So Amber and Jenny, we were chatting in the back a little bit about being women and also women who are minorities in some way, Latina, a member of the LGBT community, and a Latina, obviously being African American. How does that impact the job that you do writing in the late night world?
I feel like everybody in late night is writing off the same headlines, right? Like we all wake up in the morning, you check your like Twitter or like your New York Times app, and you see the same headlines, and then we all go to work, and our boss calls it the joke mines. Like, you go to the joke mines, and you toil away. And you're trying to figure out, like, squeeze a joke out of the headline and think, like, what is the angle? What's the way into this headline? And I think that when you are a member of, a sub-community, you just have a different angle.
Right.
And so I think that you might see something in that story that someone else doesn't see.
Yeah.
Some other irregularity strikes you, and then that's your way into the joke, or that headline hits you emotionally in a different way because maybe that piece of news about the Christian baker who doesn't want to make a wedding cake for two gay people maybe hits you differently if you had a gay wedding than it does if you are just like, I mean, you might think like, oh man, that sucks from like a distance, but if it hits you directly, then you might find a different way into that joke or have a different idea for a sketch about it.
Well, I think that's important, Amber, because, you know, for so long, kind of the late night world, it really was a room full of white men writing about these experiences that weren't necessarily impacting them. So I'm assuming it for you as well. It makes a difference because when you're from a community that's impacted, you actually feel the pain, so your comedy is coming from a different place.
Yes, absolutely. You're kind of like, it's more catharsis than just reporting on a, than just writing jokes about a thing that happened. You know, like it feels good. Yeah. And kind of behind what we do a little bit is like, there's a bit of wanting to make sure that my community doesn't feel gaslit, you know, because it is insane. And so even just by going, hey, this happened, nuts, right? That is, it calms you down. It, you know, gets us kind of all on the same page. It's yeah. just, you know, years and years went by and no one called anything out. You know, if you belong to a marginalized community, you feel that way. And so it's so great now to just be like, also, he is insane.
yeah. Well, because I come from TV world, I'm going to now throw to a clip. Because that is what we do. Let us throw to a clip so you can actually hear these brilliant ladies in action. Roll clip.
These are two of our writers, Amber and Jenny.
I'm black.
And I'm gay.
And we're both women.
And I'm not. So, here's how this works. I will read the setup for these jokes, and Amber and Jenny will read the punchlines. Here we go. New York University came under fire last month when their cafeteria served watermelon water to celebrate Black History Month.
Said black people, I'm offended that there's not more sugar in this.
An out lesbian recently competed on Belgium's Olympic skeleton team.
Because if there's one thing lesbians excel at, it's going down head first.
Hey, Jenny, did you watch the Olympics?
I watched women's hockey.
Oh, great. Like with a big group of friends?
No, alone, with candles.
Hockey? A group of black parents is suing a New Jersey school district for allegedly segregating black students.
Officials became suspicious when one school won every track meet.
Amber, did you do a sport growing up?
Yeah, I did gymnastics. They even had a fun nickname for me.
Oh, yeah, what was that?
The black girl who does gymnastics.
A Catholic school in Michigan recently fired their lesbian softball coach.
I got news for that school. You replaced her with a lesbian softball coach.
Hey, Jenny. Do you like softball?
Oh, just parts of it.
Oh, which parts?
Third base.
Clueless star Stacey Dash is reportedly running for Congress.
Stacey who? Said black people who know exactly who she is.
A female entrepreneur has created a vacation resort where no men are allowed.
Women who visit can enjoy activities like snorkeling and finishing their own sentences.
Oh. Nice one.
And you know what I mean by snorkeling, Seth.
Jenny!
I mean looking at tropical fish.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And by tropical fish, I mean...
Jenny! A NASCAR pit crew has hired its first black tire changer.
Said NASCAR drivers, hey, my hubcaps!
Famously anti-gay pastor Billy Graham passed away last month.
And I like to think he's looking up at us right now.
Got some ooze there.
Yeah, a few ooze. I think his ghost was here. And it is also homophobic.
Oh, okay.
Tell
what? Oh, I don't think it's a good idea, guys.
Oh, come on, just one.
I don't feel like this will end well.
Please.
Okay. Today is International Women's Day. International Women's Day is like a regular day, but less rational.
How dare you?
You told me it would be okay.
You should be ashamed of me.
You promised me. Black women and lesbians are liars.
Well done. Okay, so tell me a little about the process of coming up with that, because that's obviously playing on a thing that's a real thing, like in our culture, this idea among not all, but some, you know, cis white men that I can't say anything, I can't tell any jokes, everyone interprets everything I say as racist, and so that's a play on that. But talk about the process of coming up with that. Is it possible for Seth to come up with one of those jokes and get away with it? Amber.
Sure. It's possible. Anything's possible. But no, Seth can write jokes like a little monster. He, yeah. I mean, he is excellent at it. And you realize, oh, he's been doing it for like a decade at this point.
He's an incredible writer.
Yeah. But Jenny came up with Jokes Seth Can't Tell. Every Thursday we pitch ideas or come in with already written sketches. And what happened is when we write the monologue, I do not write the monologue. I write sketch. It's a much goofier trick. When the monologue team writes the monologue, they end up with jokes that are just too far. And they're hilarious, but they should not be told by Seth. And they used to just go in a file marked hearts because they were just
because we love them.
Excellent jokes.
But we can't tell them.
And we love them. And then Jenny had the idea to for us to tell the punchlines, which... Good idea, dude.
Well, I wonder how, I mean, we are in the age of Me Too and people being much more sensitive about issues around gender, around race, around identity. How do you get a room full of people? How many women are in the room? And how many people total?
So we have 14 writers in our writer's room and four of us are women.
And four women, okay. Yeah. And how many are people of color?
Three of us.
Okay, so you have a pretty diverse room. But that doesn't always guarantee that people feel comfortable voicing uncomfortable ideas. Even in comedy, I would assume that's the case, right? So how do you get people to the point where they can put out a joke and say, listen, I think we should do this. I'm a white guy, but I think you should tell this joke.
I like to think we are very open.
Yeah.
And like because it is comedy, there is no doubt that someone will say something but that rubs you the wrong way. And we have just been very clear, you know, hey, if you say some crazy I'll check you like a mother. But it is part of the process of getting to jokes. You know, you can't just come up with great jokes. It takes a lot of garbage before you come up with something good.
I always think of it as like being in a batting cage. And can I possibly have introduced that? My God.
Go on.
I did not even, sorry. In case you guys weren't sure I was gay. Lord almighty. I'm actually not somebody who plays sports, but as a kid, my dad would sometimes would take us to the batting cage. And I think of it as just, you just take swings. And some of them connect, and some of them don't. Some of them almost connect, and I think just, and then over time, you correct your swing. And so I think that like, but anytime you write monologue jokes, you just write a pile of them, and some hit and some don't. And it's often, and I think as a professional, maybe 60, 70% of the time, you know from looking at it on paper whether or not it'll hit. And there's this 30% that's a mystery. There are times you write a joke and you're like, this is a gift to America. You're welcome, everybody. Y'all are lucky I wrote this down. And then you take it to a meeting. People are like, I don't even get it. Why is the bee wearing a hat? And you're like, because of racism. It's brilliant. No? And then there's sometimes where you'll just write a joke. It's like you're on deadline. You're like, shoot, I had two more minutes to write jokes. I need 15 jokes. I only have 13. This thing about Guam. And then next thing you know, that's like the lead joke on the show that night. And you're like, I didn't think it was that funny. So I think they're like comedy is like 70% art science and then like 30% mystery magic.
Unless you're Seth, because he has some crazy spidey sense from having done it for so long, that we will go to bat for a joke and he will say, this is absolutely not gonna work. Now, you can try it if you like, but I promise you it's not gonna work. And I feel like I fought him for a year and now I'm done. And if he says the joke's not gonna work, then I go, okie dokie, and I throw it in the garbage.
Yeah, I feel like I've learned my lesson, but yeah, I was like a little bit too much like a, not even that I wasn't like proud, like I was too proud to take notes. It was more like I'm like a mom who I'm like, but I love that joke. I nurtured it in the nest and then I watched it fly onto my computer screen and I just know it can do it. And then you hear it at rehearsal, get nothing, and you're like, I was told 4 hours ago in a meeting to my face that that joke would not work. And then here's the proof. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I want to talk about a little bit about translating the insane real news into comedy. I mean, we're on our show doing it once a week. I mean, twice a week, trying to distill just madness from an entire week into news. So I want to talk about you guys in this sort of fire hose of doing that constantly and on a nightly basis. I want to start with you, Jenny, and a bit that you did about Puerto Rico and about the mistreatment of it by the current president of the United States. Let's roll that clip.
If Mayor Cruz ever goes full Puerto Rican on you, tú vas a pedir a Dios que Kim Jong-un te mande la bomba. Sin vergüenza. You might be thinking, well, if she didn't get that mad, maybe she's not Puerto Rican. But you know how I know she is? because she's in the middle of a storm and she still looks good. Look at those glasses. Meanwhile, you look like a hurricane hit you on a normal day. Mira, quit calling Mayor Cruz nasty. That's not the word you mean. You mean non-compliant. You're mad because you were challenged by a woman of color. You're mad that a woman of color is more compassionate and better at her job than you because you don't like us. And I know why. It's because we have the thick, wavy hair you so desperately crave.
That's real. I mean, you have the thick, wavy hair. I'm so desperately crave. That's real. But how do you navigate between being, you know, a comedian in your own right with your own thoughts on lots of different things and being the anger translator for all Puerto Ricanas all over the world?
I think to me the key though is like to definitely trying not to be to speak for all Puerto Ricans. I think like the only I think comedy always works best when it is. It sounds silly, but there's this kind of like corny phrase that you hear a lot in comedy that the specific is universal, and I think. You can't really talk in generalities. I think it doesn't connect with people, and you can't speak for a whole group of people. Like I can't speak for all lesbians. We saw some YouTube comment that was like, "These jokes are so old. Only an old person would like these jokes." I'm old. I'm an old lesbian. So I'm gonna write jokes about Melissa Etheridge and cargo pants. And I don't know what young lesbians do, but if I tried to write about it, I would sound ridiculous. You know what I mean? And I think the same is true with this Puerto Rican bit. Like, I am Puerto Rican, but I moved here when I was 5. I didn't grow up in a predominantly Puerto Rican area. So I can only write to what it is about it that really strikes me. And so I think with that bit, when I watched that clip where Trump said that she was nasty, I just thought, like, I grew up in a Puerto Rican household with a Puerto Rican mom, and that was my thought. I was like, you ain't seen nasty. There's another part in there that we didn't show where I say that, like, my mom in a parent-teacher conference told one of my teachers to go to hell, and the teacher was a priest. So I feel like what I can speak to is, son, you do not even know. And so I feel like that's like the thing is, I think like the only way I can do it is like think like, and I think that's true for all of these headlines that, like you said, a fire hose is a perfect way to describe that. Yeah. There's all these headlines coming at you. They're all awful. And the most you can do is look in your own gut and say like, how does this make me feel personally and write from that place? And then weirdly, the more specific you make it, the more people it tends to resonate with. Yeah. And I don't know why that's true, but that, in my experience, is true.
I mean, and Amber, obviously the blacks are constantly renting space in the mind of the president. He spends a lot of time on the blacks. He's constantly in a very negative way. And so, you know, you're coming to work every day experiencing that as a black woman and then having to be funny as a result of it. How do you mitigate between just the damn outrage, right, of this is the way he's treating people like me, and how do I make this comedy for everyone to enjoy?
You said the blacks, and that reminded me of, do you remember a million years ago? There was this old man, and he had a Confederate flag out in front of his house, and it was burned, and someone had spray-painted blacks rule on his house. And it was like, black people didn't write blacks rule.
Exactly.
I've never said anything rules. Rules? Also, blacks. That made me think of that. I must have laughed about that for a week. It was the best. Little liar. But I, to answer your question, like, it is, you know, kind of maddening to be a black lady in America right now. But it is shocking that white people are seeing it. It is like I was invisible and now you can see me. It is shocking. I mean, not 5 years ago, I wouldn't have said these cops be killing black folks. Like, it is their job, and there are no repercussions for it. Like, I would never have said that. Not at my job, right. I would not have said that. But now, you can just tell the whole truth, and boy, oh boy, that feels good. Enough to make up for being a black lady in America. No, but but I mean it is really, really nice. Yeah. Like that feeling of being seen, it feels great. I feel so spoiled.
Yeah. Well, I want to play a moment that, particularly for black women, really was kind of a moment of triumph, and that was Alabama. Alabama is where black women were able to say, just vote like us and you will be okay. Come with us if you want to live, right? I mean, we were able to say that, and it was true. So this was a bit that you did about the aftermath of the Roy Moore defeat for the United States Senate in Alabama. Roll tape.
Roy Moore was a well-known anti-gay, anti-Muslim, racist pedophile. Allegedly. Here's how white women responded to him.
Was there ever a moment when you questioned your support for Roy Moore?
No.
And this is how black women responded to him. P.S. You know that's why Omarosa got fired today. Trump was like, you promised me the black lady vote. And she was probably like, I don't know any. So not only did we get rid of Roy Moore, we got rid of Omarosa in one night. Woo! Hey, what did you do last night? Watch The Voice? Now, white people, I invite you to look upon our example and steal it. It's called appropriating, and it should be easy for you because you do it all the time. So while you're busy appropriating our music and our fashion and our big fat booties, try appropriating our common sense. Stop trying to rap and try getting up on a Tuesday to go vote. I woke up this morning and saw the phrase black women was trending on Twitter. So of course my first thought was, oh God, are we illegal now? So I immediately checked to make sure the next topic wasn't hashtag round them up, but it wasn't. But it turns out it was trending because everyone was writing, thank you, black women, and that is cool. But when you're done thanking us, why don't you try voting for us and putting a few of us in office so we can run this
Brilliant. So, I mean, so it had to be a welcome change, right? Because there's so much of the kind of day-to-day narrative of black life is, as you mentioned, you know, Black Lives Matter is difficult to cover, to talk about, to experience as a human being. And that was a moment of, like, sort of pure we told you so joy.
Oh, nanny, nanny, boo-boo. Ooh, we told you so. But that, I mean, that was great. And I don't think, I mean, I don't know. I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think it was a white person who reported, gosh, I forget what it was, but I think they were white, who was like, hey, black women saved us. Everybody, watch out. And, you know, and then it just got picked up by so many outlets, and it was like, we are seen. This is so cool. Because they did.
Yeah. They saved us. I want to ask you both about, you know, whether there are still areas that are too soon to be made funny. You know, things you are still, it's still tough to write about in that writer's room. Let's talk about hashtag Me Too. There's been a lot of talk about the way that the awards shows have tried to handle it, awkwardly, I think, mostly. Are there areas that are in the news that everyone knows about, that are common knowledge, but that are still too sensitive to make jokes about?
I don't know that it necessarily, for me, I don't know that it's necessarily where the topic is, and it might be where the writer is. Because there's some areas where I feel like I have just enough emotional distance where I can pull back and say, okay, here's how I feel, and here's the angle on how I want to write it. And I think, like I did a piece for the show about when Kevin Spacey put out that statement, and he's like, oh, sorry, I molested that boy, I'm gay, so that's why, and it's okay now. And I had a lot of feelings about that.
Yes, she did.
So many feelings.
All day she had feelings.
But I feel like that stereotype of gay people as predatory is something that has existed for so long that I've had a long time to process my feelings about it. And so I was able to sit down and immediately write something because I felt like my thoughts were organized. And I think that with the Me Too stuff, I think I had a similar emotional arc that you were talking about with, like, finally you couldn't believe people were saying it, where I feel like any woman who has a job anywhere knows that harassment is real and it's everywhere. And I think I was so shocked by it being acknowledged, but I think I also felt emotionally exhausted from every man I knew being like, did you have any idea this was so? And I'd be like, yes, I knew. Everyone knew. Your sister knows. Your girlfriend knows. And so I think I was too busy having the feelings to pull. I would go in every day and try to write something about it. And I think in that moment, I was too busy having the feelings to know how to talk about my feelings. That makes sense. So I think for me, it depends on maybe where the writer is. But I think, like, there's a lot of people say, look, you can't make jokes about race. You can't make jokes about sexual harassment. You can't. I don't think that's true. I think it's, do you have the right angle? Is the right person or institution the butt of the joke? Are you handling it the right way? I don't think there's anything you can't joke about, but there's ways that are wrong to joke about it. Yeah. and you might be not be the right person, and you might be not be in the right place at that moment to do it.
How difficult is it to be the person of color or the woman in the room who points that out to a writer who's getting it wrong?
In our room, it's easy. But I mean, that's me talking.
Amber is the alpha male in our writer's room. And that's not an exaggeration. Amber sets the tone. If you mess up, Amber will let you know.
Yeah.
And then everybody else falls in line behind Amber, and they're like, yeah, you messed up.
But, you know, we were talking a little bit about this, and we were just chatting, you know, before we came onto the TuneIn podcast, mm-hmm. That you guys have really cool jobs, obviously. There are lots of people who
so
love...
You.
Thank you very much. You're would welcome. Love to be doing... I mean, but, you know, you guys are network. You know, that's amazing, right? People... It's a very coveted position. And for a young writer who's coming up, who just is getting into sketch comedy writing, it can probably be pretty intimidating to raise your hand and be the person to say, that wasn't funny, it was actually offensive. How difficult was that early in your careers to do it? And how would you counsel somebody who's just getting into the business? How do you handle that kind of a situation?
There was a point in time where I did not do it. I didn't. It was just different back then. And I, you know, am so young, but you know, you couldn't just say, you could like gently suggest, you know, maybe don't say, I'm the pimpinest bitch up in this bitch. You know, like maybe the black person is the doctor. You know, like there are. You learned how to, like, gently convince people to act right. But now you can yell it like a mug.
Yeah.
But it's partially because no one wants to be a turd. No one wants to be the person who got it wrong.
Right.
Yeah. I think it can be scary to, like, speak up and pitch things. And I think that that's, like, scary probably for anybody starting out in comedy. And then you also add the social dynamics of, like, if you're a woman doing comedy, just... Statistically speaking, you're always going to either be the only one in the room or one of one or two or three in the room. You're always going to be in the minority. And so it is scary in those situations to raise your voice, I think. And so this is very corny, but I like corny mantras. And so I have this little corny mantra that I say, if you pitch, you win. And so I try. I know, it's very dorky.
She says it all the time.
I'm very dorky. But I feel like, because I was at a job where I've been in many jobs where I was the only woman in the room. And I would just say to myself, okay, the battle isn't even getting it approved. The battle isn't even getting the laugh. The battle is, it's already a miracle statistically that I'm in the room.
I know, that's right.
Right? That I even have this job is already the miracle. So I feel like, great, my job is to show up and pitch. And then it's my boss's job to decide if it has value. Because if I get involved in the business of deciding if my idea has value... I'll never say anything. So I feel like, okay, I have the skill set that got me this far, and I think I have an idea for a funny thing about a bee in a hat. Let me just say it out loud and let someone else decide if it has value.
I need
value.
To understand why you're so obsessed with this bee wearing a hat. We're going to have a separate podcast just about the bee in a hat, because you want this bee to be in a hat, and I don't understand why.
Because of racism. I already said it.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. You're
it's
right.
It's a very multi-layered joke.
You're right.
It's a lot of social commentary in it. Yeah. No, but I feel like, it's very corny, but I think especially for women trying to do this work, if you can get in the room, and if you have an idea and you say it out loud, you have already accomplished so much that I just think, like, let that be the thing. Like, say your idea, trust it has value, and if it doesn't, trust that the next one will. And I think that if you just keep pitching, you just keep swinging, we have to bring it back to softball analogies.
Oh my gosh.
He's swinging, something will connect, but if you pitch, you win. That is the bravest thing. It's easy to go out and tell a joke that works. It's scary and risky and high stakes to say out loud a joke you don't know is going to work.
Right. And I also wonder, you know, I know even in sort of the newsroom, there is also that feeling of when you are, you know, you're a minority in the room, of also being in a sense a guardian for your own people and making sure that the line isn't crossed over into ridiculing your own people. And so stopping the jokes from becoming ridicule of black people, of Latinas, of, you know, people who are in the LGBT community. How do you navigate that, especially if you aren't one of four out of 14, if you're one?
Yeah, I mean, I think it takes a little bit of ridicule. I don't think it can all be, you know, they treat us bad and cops are crazy and the wage gap. I think it also has to be jokes about our stereotypes, because I would hate to be like, I am an untouchable victim. Like, I do not want to do that. What I want to do is be like, hey, you know what? There, it's layered. And, yeah, I, you know, am a stereotype in a couple of ways. But also, like, we're great. And I think that you don't get that greatness unless you acknowledge everything, mm-hmm. you know?
And also, I feel like I don't know that I don't know that there's a foolproof way to keep from doing that. And I feel like there might be, I think there have been a couple jokes where afterwards I'm like, I don't know. Was that joke about the gay prom all right? or I feel like, or I'm open to like, if a day after I tell a joke about lesbians, someone's like, hey man, that joke about Home Depot was not okay for these reasons you did not consider. I'm also open to being educated and being like, oh, I will not make that mistake again. Yeah. But I think the most you can do is go into it with the right intentions and hope that you do it okay.
Yeah. Have you ever had a situation where everyone in the room agreed that a joke was funny, that sketch was really great, and then it just didn't work? Ooh. How do you navigate that feeling of, wow, that aired and that was not good?
Can I say two words to you?
Fun Obama!
Wait, what?
So we did a couple of shows from D.C., and we only went down there with one sketch. And that sketch was me being like,
Amber dressed head to toe like an exact replica of Barack Obama. Wig, suit, American flag pin. She looked like Barack Obama.
I looked like him a little bit.
She brought it to a
That's
sketch
part
meeting.
Of the problem. Yeah.
We had this meeting. We have a meeting every Thursday where you bring in sketches. And Amber brought in the sketch. And she was like, basically Seth was like, hey, what are you going to do? You know, your term's almost over. It's over in a couple months. What are you going to do? And she basically just was like, woo, I'm going to be fun. And we all, Joy, I wish the writer's room was, we were crying, laughing so hard.
It was so funny.
It was the funniest. We were all, everybody else was like, why didn't I think of that sketch? Amber's a genius. We all hate ourselves. Amber's the only, like, talented person in the world. We love it. We love it.
We were like, it made sense because he was, you know, parasailing and and I just came out and was like, hey, I'm a party boy now. And we loved it. And then we did it for the test audience in D.C., and it was silent.
Have you ever gone into a sound booth where you go to record, and it's like the sound has been sucked out of a place?
Oh, Lord.
It was
did
like...
Did you know that silence has an echo? It was so silent. Oh, my God.
It was like that sound, that sketch... And it was like it melted everyone's vocal cords and made them unable to laugh.
Oh,
you've never seen it. And we were all like, what...
I guess we're all crazy. If you closed your eyes, you would think you were in space. It was so quiet.
And I still stand by that sketch. And so every once in a while, you're just like, I guess my barometer's broken.
Yeah. I'm just wrong.
Fun Obama didn't work.
But friggin' 30 people can be wrong.
Right, right, right.
Nary a noise?
Yeah.
Nary a noise? The word
Because sometimes there's some jokes that just work for some people. Right. Like, every once in a while... Like, I did every once in a while I'll read rejected jokes in a live theater, and they have some jokes that don't make it on a joke Seth can't tell, and I think, oh, that's just because that joke only works for lesbians. Yeah. And I'll tell it, and they'll be like, a silence, and then two laughs, and I'm like, that's two ladies on a date. They feel me. And but this joke worked for, this sketch worked for no human. No one with ears.
Nobody.
This sketch did not work for anyone with ears.
So bad. Oh, it was good. You know what? God. Everybody needs to be taken down a peg.
Yeah, but it's a learning experience.
But it also makes everything that fails, every time you have every time you have a failure and then you still get to go to work the next day, it makes all the matter a little bit less.
Because I should have been fired.
It was so bad.
I mean, Joy, the wig department made a wig. Like, every a suit was fitted.
Invested in Fun Obama.
Oh, a suit was fitted to her. A man's suit.
Oh my God! I
you
was
know
like,
what?
We're gonna bring
I
this back.
I think you should
month.
Put Fun Obama on YouTube because YouTube has a different taste level.
YouTube would
the
melt.
The kids may get Fun Obama.
Then they could vocalize why they do not.
In the comment section.
The comment section.
Section
would just be melted with fire, melting your computer. People would rage. We hate this.
Oh,
we want
Fun
this
Obama.
3 minutes back.
Wow.
But I think that right. That is, and I think to get back to your earlier question, I think like if people are coming up in comedy, like you, it's almost like you want them to know, like it's okay, like it's. Some of them are going to stink, and that's all right. Like, that's okay.
So I was looking at my little clock in front of me. We've gone a full 34 minutes without directly talking about Donald Trump. So I see this as almost a vacation from my job, like being here right now, of not having to talk about him. But we have to talk about him because, you know, he presents a unique conundrum I would say for comedy, because a lot of what he's doing is ridiculous, but not funny. How complicated and difficult is it to tell jokes about somebody who, for a lot of people, is dangerous and not funny, but who is in a lot of ways sort of made to for comedy? Amber.
I mean, we're all having a bad time. You know what I mean? Like, we all need that laugh the same amount. That's not true. So, some of us are having worse
time. Some people
are
having a great time.
Some people are having a great time. Some people are having the worst time of all time. But it just, it becomes, I was kind of saying this earlier, it becomes necessary to be like, this is not normal. This is crazy. Right, everybody? And even that, it you feel like it makes people laugh because they're like, yes, yes, he is crazy, yes. Someone hears him. But it's maddening, Joy.
And I think, too, like the thing people like, I think whenever you do a job, there's always like three or four standard things people say to you at a dinner party. I'm sure. Do you have a couple?
Oh, yeah.
What do people say to you at a dinner party always?
Thank you for keeping me sane. Please hold their feet to the fire. Nice. And when is he going to be impeached?
Oh,
those are the three.
Okay. Yeah. So I think every profession, like if you're a doctor, probably people go, hey, look at this mole. But if you're a comedy writer, ever since Trump got elected, people go, it must write itself. That's what everybody says. And I feel like, does it? Then you come to my job and write it. No, I think it is hard. It's hard to look at every day. There's so much of it. I really, again, I'm going to come back to that phrase you use, fire hose. It just feels like, right, like in a normal administration, maybe once a month you get a headline as big as the ones that we have, but now it's you turn on your phone, you're like, oh, God, here we go. And there's like eight that happened while you were sleeping. And so I just think the challenge becomes like, okay, what do I want to say about it? And what do I want people to be thinking about? We talked about this a little bit backstage, that I feel like there's so much happening with the administration that then the challenge becomes, okay, what is the important thing to say about this? Because Stormy Daniels is a fun, funny name, and it's real easy to make fun of a woman who's an adult film star, and that feels like an easy target, and those are the cheap jokes. But what do we want to say about this? What is it about this story that disturbs me? Or maybe do I even care about this story, or do I care about us getting out of the Paris Climate Agreement? Would I rather talk about that and put people's attention there?
Yeah.
Right? Like, I think it's the challenge becomes, how do I handle this onslaught and what do I want? What do I actually want to say?
That is so crazy that our jobs in that sense are exactly the same, particularly
That's
on Stormy
so
Daniels.
Cool.
I'm a little afraid.
Our jobs shouldn't be this
they
close.
They shouldn't be this similar.
They shouldn't be this close.
They should be completely different.
I should be dressed as a bee right now, choosing my hat.
With a hat! Okay, let's do the scariest part of any sort of live performance, which is we turn it over to the audience, randomly self-selected of people who would like to ask questions. So we're now going to have a microphone that's going to travel around. Please speak into it, because don't forget you are on a podcast here in the TuneIn studio at South by Southwest. Tune in.
Oh.
What? Okay, so let's let you guys ask a couple of questions. I'm especially interested in people taking the opportunity, if you're interested in getting into comedy writing, this is a great opportunity to talk to some ladies who are in the biz, as they say. And here we have our first contestant.
Hi, I'm Curia Francis, and I want to thank you for the open bar and to my my sofa sisters over here. I do have a question in regards to being in the room. I work for an ad agency, and being a creative or being the only person that has an idea from a different perspective can be very taxing, for lack of a better word. Can you tell me about the first moment that all of you, including you, Joanne, where you were in a room that you broke through and said, I'm going to say my truth? And how did it feel? And can you tell me a little bit about that moment?
I'd love to hear Joy's response if you have one. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you a very quick story. I used to run a site called The Griot. Hopefully some people have heard of The Griot. Yes, Griot Massive. And so I was often in a meeting called The Share, which is the morning meeting at NBC, where all of the different primetime and dayside show leaders are in. And I would be in there as a representative of The Griot, and then there would be my colleague from NBC Latino. And we would often be the only people of color in the room, or maybe there'd be three or four max. And I remember in 2012, there was this conventional wisdom that Barack Obama was going to lose. And so we at the Griot had about 500,000 Facebook page members at that point. We actually spent money to go out and do a poll with the NBC Wall Street Journal polling outfit. So we actually had data and anecdotal evidence that that wasn't true, and that actually, you know, African-American voters were not tired of Barack Obama, that he was going to win. So the whole table went around. Everybody was giving the wisdom that, you know, it's really going to be tough for Obama. He's in a really tough position. I think that he it's Romney's to win, and it's going to be difficult. And so I had the, once it came to me, had to say, well, all of you who have been in this business a lot longer than I have are wrong from our perspective, and had to speak up and say, you know, I can back that up. This isn't me wishful thinking black person saying, because Barack Obama's the black president and I'm the black girl in the room, I want him to win, so I'm just going to say he's going to win. Yeah. But actually having to say that in a room full of experts, really, and also back it up. And so I think the important sort of lesson is that you have to speak your truth with backup. And in the end, that data that we had proved out, I mean, the turnout of African Americans was accelerated in 2012, if anything, and it wasn't diminished. So I think you just have to stand up for yourself, but be able to back up what you're saying. Yeah. Ladies.
Your turn.
What? I agree.
I mean, I don't know. I have been murdered on several occasions. Like, I have certainly stood up and been like, hey, this is bullshit. This sketch can't be like this. This is an embarrassment to this theater. Yeah, I've said all kinds of things. And people have been like, shut up. So, I mean, it took a minute. But what people don't understand is you have to. Like, all those times when I stood up and was like, hey, this is bullshit, ultimately, I'm fine. Like, it didn't affect me. It made me feel sane. And it's all the times that I didn't that make me feel.
Amen. All right, let's get another question. That mic is going around. Okay, please introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Janie, and I just have a question about, people keep saying to me, because I'm an aspiring woman in comedy as well, and people keep saying, oh, it's a great time for women in comedy. And I'm like, is it?
That's the other thing people say to you at a party.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding. That's the other thing. So what do you, so your question is
it? My question is, I mean, how do you guys feel about that phrase? Because people say that to me all the time, and yet I feel very unseen. I feel like people don't, I'm having trouble getting my thoughts out there.
Do you know who says that phrase? Dudes.
Yeah, all dudes.
I feel like, statistically speaking, there's still far fewer women in comedy. So I think, is it a better time to be a woman in comedy now than it was in the 80s? Yes. Is it better to be a woman now than in the 1700s? Yes. But that doesn't mean that there's no work to be done and that it's all cool. And I think that what I don't love about that phrase is that it negates the work that there is to be done. So I think, like, yeah, is it a better time to be a woman now than it was even, like, before Me Too happened in October? Sure. Sure. But I think that I think there's two things about being a woman in comedy that are true. I think one is that there are some things that are going to be stacked against you that are real and true and unchangeable, just like any being a woman in anything. You could replace being a woman in NASA, being a woman at law school, being a woman who is practicing to be a dental assistant. I think any woman in any male-dominated field is going to have some challenges that are presented by society, and those you cannot change. So that is true and a bummer. But the other thing that is true is that you can always control how hard you work and how good you are.
Yeah.
And when you are good, people want your So I think that you can acknowledge that you don't feel crazy. You can acknowledge it is real that there are some challenges that men in comedy don't have to face, and that is real. And we can all say that out loud so that we don't feel crazy. But you can also put that on a shelf and say, well, I'm going to put this here, and I can't do anything about it, so I'm going to put this here, and I know it's here, but I'm going to put it here, and then I'm going to work super hard to be as good as I can be. Because that's a thing you can control, and you can make yourself crazy trying to control something you can't control, or you can put that energy into being so good that your jokes are so good that they can't help but hire you. And so I think that's, if it helps at all, and I don't mean to say, like, you can't change the world and things can't change, and I don't mean to negate that part of it, but I just feel like, man, just be the best one in the room, because you can be. Like, be like, damn, we can't not hire Janie.
Yeah.
We wanted to hire a rich white dude who had a trust fund, but Janie's jokes are 12 times better, so I guess we have to hire Janie.
Yeah.
That's right. Something black parents tell their black children is, you have to be undeniable.
Yeah.
It was a word my parents used.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, I think we have time for another.
Hi, ladies. Thank you so much. I'm Dr. Goddess Joy. I love you so much. I can't wait to talk to you. So
I think I follow you on Twitter.
Listen, we have been twins and twins,
yes,
and Twitter husbands and wives for years. Just so you know. So, but I so appreciate. My question to all of you, but I have two slightly different questions. Joy, you are committing like a public service for everybody. The way that you tweet, I mean, you have really changed the game. And so I wanted you to talk about.
Can you please say that again for my boss?
Joy, Joy, you deserve a raise and a bonus for the way that you tweet.
And you know, publicist is in the room. Did you write that down?
Okay. No, it's a law that if you say it on a podcast, you have to do it.
It's law.
That's a law.
Thank you. Exactly. So I look forward to receiving all of your checks. You issue Black Girl Magic on Twitter every day, but it really is a public service. And I wanted to know from you, how do you feel having to navigate that space, and what has Twitter done for you and your quote-unquote brand, and what would you like to see as a result of all of the work that you have done that I know, even though we're joking, largely has been unpaid? Okay, so that's a question for you. The question for you two ladies is, as Dr. Goddess, I come from the world, so I'm an academic, but I come from the world of theater, and I grew up in the performing arts. And so I toured Dr. Goddess, a one-woman show, and all before, like, this whole digital revolution. So I do a lot of sketch comedy. I play 16 different characters. We can do this, ladies. Like, I mean, let's do this. Okay, but my question is, how do I reintroduce myself, honestly, as a sketch comic? And now that the landscape is a little bit more welcoming for the things that I've done, because I created my show around one statistic, and it is that the number one cause of death of pregnant women in America is homicide. And how I was able to joke about that in many different ways and play different characters was amazing. And people really embraced it in theaters. And now I'm like, okay, should I just throw it out on YouTube? I mean, I created DVDs and stuff like that. And I can do stand-up comedy, but I don't, you know, I come from the world of theater. And so I'm like a young Anna Deavere Smith. That's what I do. So I was just wondering how
to translate that.
Should I reintroduce myself? Yes,
okay.
Thank you.
Wait, do you want to take that, ladies?
When you you should have a pile of work, a huge pile of work, and if you have the means to put it on YouTube, it should be on YouTube, because it doesn't. I've gotten so many gigs from one sketch. I got two jobs from one sketch. Maybe it had 400 views. It probably still does, but all you are responsible for is having a body of work that you can point to and say, I know I can do this, and now you know because of this pile of work. And that's, the pile should be getting bigger and bigger every day. You know, you should be working as though someone is paying you. So that someone will, but you gotta stockpile. You know, it's a war. You gotta have a bunch of ammo, man. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And you know, to answer your other question, I'll kind of throw this to you guys a little bit as well. That what you do with jokes Seth can't tell is sort of bring the writer's room, bring yourselves out of the writer's room. Normally the writers are completely invisible. We don't see them except on, you know, on shows like SNL where people double as both, but it gives you this extra voice to be actually on the air telling jokes and not just writing jokes. And I would just say that for me, Twitter is sort of my exit out of the writer's room, right? Because normally when you're doing in the news business, you're just basically giving the news and information. Twitter and social media gives you this extra added voice that in some cases only some people hear that, right? So, I mean, whenever I meet, not whenever, but generally if I meet someone under 30 who knows who I am, it's because of Twitter. And so it's given me an opportunity to talk to another audience in a more truncated way that isn't sort of the produced way we do on TV. You have to be responsible with it, obviously. It can be, you know, it's a high wire act because you're out there in front of, I mean, I remember when I first got to 5,000 Twitter followers, I almost threw a party. I probably actually legitimately threw a party when I got to 100,000 followers, and I just said it was a party for a different reason. But people came, and it really was legit.
Did you go to the Ian?
It's a housewarming. You already live here.
What? Oh, 100,000 followers. Yeah, so I mean, I actually really feel like it does give you the sexual force. And I wonder about that with you guys. Do you feel like this other outlet where you can tell the jokes too, is that sort of an extra little sort of escape from the writer's room in a way? An extra voice.
You're more active on Twitter than I am, so you, what do you think?
Twitter? No, I don't know. I mean, I'm just using it for things that I think are hilarious.
Are you posting pictures of cats? Because a lot of people use it for that too.
Look, cats are cute.
No,
but I mean, I will just use it to goof around. I'm not trying to make my voice heard. I'm trying to see what rhymes with fart.
I can't with you. The B and the hat and the things that rhyme with fart. All right, I think we have time for one more question.
Cart.
So let's send that mic around. Oh, do we have somebody? Aha.
Hi. So my name's Madison Landau, possibly related to John Landau or Martin Landau. Who knows? If they want to do a DNA test, you know. But I'm about to graduate university, and I'm a film and journalism minor. And, you know, being a female in all these classes, it's really hard because most of the time I am one of very few. So how do I make myself well known as a female? I don't know. How do I climb the ladder without pushing the boundaries too much? Because I have been not called derogatory words, but compared to guys, I am more scrutinized. And I just, like, how do I fight back against that? Because you three ladies have been in this business for a while, and you've obviously seen much more than I have. So it is kind of intimidating about to graduate and not knowing what I'm about to do and how hard I have to fight for it.
No, I think you guys should start. Go for it.
Jenny. I think probably my response would be similar to my response to Janie's. I think that I think there's all different kinds of jobs, right? And there's different kinds of work environments. And some of them are going to be welcoming and great to everybody, and some are not going to be as friendly. And again, I think that the thing that you can control is how hard you work and how good you are. And if you are awesome and good and hardworking and you show up on time and you have good ideas and you do what's required of you and you do extra and people don't want to hear that because you're a woman, f*** them and go work somewhere else. And I think like that's you. I know that's easier said than done. Like it's not. I know there. It's not. It's easy to say like go get another job. Like maybe there isn't one. But I think that like you just be as good as you can and as honest as you can and as you as you can. And there will be a place that is happy to have that and lucky to have that.
Yeah. Amber?
Yeah. I mean, my friend Christina Anthony, who is a our friend, who is also a Second City improviser, she says, whenever you are the only black person, but woman, whenever you are the only woman in the room, don't let that scare you. Let it prepare you. So that because you can, because you even know enough to be like, hey, something's off here. That's, you know, that is helping you. And the fact that you know that, hey, you are being scrutinized more than everyone else, that is helping you. Having that sense, you'd be surprised. A lot of people do not know that that is happening to them. You are already ahead, but do not worry about these other people. You can't. All you can do is be like, I am excellence squished into some lady, and then act so.
And I'll just give you some of the best advice, career advice I've ever gotten. Actually, I got from a white guy named Chris Matthews, who said, "Show up." Right? Show up. One of the things that women tend to do is to wait until we are over-prepared before we raise our hand for opportunities. Yes. Yes. Whereas, you know, we wait until we've been First Lady and United States Senator and Secretary of State, and then we run for president. Yep. A lot of men, particularly white men, they're like, I was on a TV show. I can be president. That's the difference a lot of times between us and them. Yeah. Raise your hand, but when you show up prepared. Yeah. That's the key, is show up, take a chance, and raise your hand for opportunities, but show up prepared. Yeah. I think we have time for one more.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Talia. First off, I want to thank you guys so much for coming. I'm also a current college student studying TV and film, and I'm in a sketch comedy group. And, you know, I really do aspire to be like a woman in late night or someone in your shoes. So my question was just along the lines of, like, if you could speak to your college age self now, like, what advice would you give, knowing what you know, like, seeing what you've seen? Also, like, the hardships and, you know, those moments of self-doubt.
I think the one thing I would say is it is going to be fine. And that's the thing is, I think, like, no, honestly, like, my roommate in college was an aspiring attorney. So she, our senior year, took the LSATs. And then she applied to law school. And then she went to law school. And then she did interviews for firms. And there was a very clearly laid out path for her. Now, how well she did on that path depended on how hard she worked. But there was a path. And I think that for aspiring comedy writers, there is no clear path. There are a million crazy paths. We work with a guy who worked in an IT department in Peoria, Illinois, and then ended up at our job.
Yes, he did.
So I think there are a million. Some people put a bunch of videos on YouTube and get discovered that way. Some people tweet a lot. Some people have like a book they wrote or shouts and murmurs they wrote that somebody responds to, and now they write for Blackish. You know, there's a million paths. And so I think that don't worry about how it's going to happen. It's actually going to be fine. It's going to be fine. But I would say then just find the path that is true to you. So if you have a friend who has a one-woman show where she wears a bunch of wigs and you're like, I'm not really a wig person. I'm like a stand-and-tell-jokes person. Then be a stand-and-tell-jokes person and do the thing that is true to you. Yeah. And that will lead you to the next thing, which will lead you to the next thing, which will lead you to something that is great and perfect for you. If you try to follow somebody else's path, you're going to end up on someone else's path and it won't feel right and you won't do as well as you would if you're just yourself. So that's the thing, is it's going to be fine.
Yeah, it took us a minute to realize all people want is you. You know, all people want is your honesty. And that's true of every comedian. If you take a look at all the weird people doing weird, you love them. And they're not, they're just being themselves, you know, and that's all people want. But yeah, it is, as long as you are working hard, you're going to be just fine. Like it took, whatever your path is, like I did theater for like 10 years.
I went to grad school.
Literally thousands of shows.
I spent $80,000 on grad school.
I spent no money on college.
No one is going to tell you that's a great choice, but it was the right choice for me at that moment. Am I telling you to do it? No. But it was the right thing for me at that moment, and another person in my shoes at that age, it wouldn't have been the right thing for them. And in fact, some people looked me in the eye, and they were like, this is not the right thing. But it was for me. And when I finished grad school, all my classmates went to L.A., and I was like, I'm going to go to New York. And people were like, that is wrong. And I was like, probably on paper, but for me, it feels right. And I did it, and it was fine. Amber and I met doing a show in Denver. You could go to 1,000 panels at South by Southwest at the tune-in stage, and you could raise your hand and say, should I do a show in Denver? And everybody
will say,
no, why would you do that? But we did, and it was the right thing for both of us at that moment. So the only thing you can do is, those are the two things. One, you're going to be fine. And the second thing is, do the thing that is you.
I think that is a perfect place to bring this to an end. Amber Ruffin and Jenny Hagel, thank you all for being here. These ladies, I'm going to let you applaud because they deserve the applause. Are proof that you do have to be smart to be funny, because they are brilliant, and that is why they are so hilarious. And you two ladies are a huge reason to tune in to Late Night with Seth Meyers. He better give both of y'all a raise. Double your salary.
You said it on a podcast.
Oh, my God, we're all getting raises. Thank you all for being here, and enjoy your time at South by Southwest.
Give it up for Joy Reid, please.
Joy Reid, everybody. Follow me on Twitter.
Follow her on Twitter.
Bye.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, Dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.